Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. Happy Monday. Did you remember to, you know, it's 10:06, right? Not 11:06 in the morning. You remember, you know, we once had a guest who was an hour late for an interview because they forgot to. So it's 10:06, just in case anybody needs to be reminded. Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, the mayor and the occupiers, a call-in for anyone who celebrated Guy Fawkes Day or Bank Transfer Day on Saturday, including calls from Brits who can explain to the rest of us what Guy Fawkes Day means over there, now that it's being adopted in a certain respect by the Occupy Wall Street movement. A preview of tomorrow's election day in New Jersey, including should sports gambling, betting on the Jets, say, be legalized in the state. There will be a referendum. The legacy of Dominican deportees today, the impact of government programs on our eating habits, and a faith-to-faith dialogue today that I think will be fresh and fascinating between a Muslim South African young woman from a poor community in Cape Town and a Quaker American, a wealthy philanthropist. They are both working for social change. They'll talk about religion and politics in the millennial generation here and abroad coming up later. And congratulations to anyone listening today from the 47,000. Talk about the 1%. How about the 1% measured that way? Those of you with the fortitude to run the marathon, what a perfect weather day for it. Maybe that's one reason that Jeffrey Mutai was able to smash the course record by more than 2 minutes. And the second and third place runners also beat the old record, which had stood for a decade. But congratulations to all of you who even tried. Now, the mayor and the occupiers. Mayor Bloomberg's relationship with the protesters in Zuccotti Park has gotten mixed reviews. He's been supportive of their free speech rights, maybe more than some other mayors, but dismissive of their politics, especially recently. They want more respectful policing from the mayor. Opponents want the mayor to kick the occupiers out. What will happen next? We don't know. But late last week, Mayor Bloomberg was in a panel discussion at a breakfast for business leaders. And he said this about the vilification of banks and the ways that occupiers blame them. Listen.
Some of them are totally unfounded. It was not the banks that created the mortgage crisis. It was plain and simple Congress who forced everybody to go and to give mortgages to people who were on the cusp. Now, I'm not so sure that was terrible policy because a lot of those people who got homes still have them, and they wouldn't have had them without that. But they were the ones that pushed Fannie and Freddie to make a bunch of loans that were imprudent, if you will. They were the ones that pushed the banks to loan to everybody. And now we want to go vilify the banks because it's one target. It's easy to blame them.
So Mayor Bloomberg from last week at a breakfast, that audio courtesy of Capital New York's Ozzie Pabura. And let's talk about the mayor and the occupiers, both on the issues and on the management of the encampment. Joyce Pernick, WNYC political analyst and author of Mike Bloomberg, Money, Power, Politics, and Matt Taibbi, contributing editor for Rolling Stone and the author of Griftopia, a story of bankers, politicians, and the most audacious power grab in American history. Welcome back, Matt and Joyce.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Matt, you watched the video that we played that clip from, and you took to your blog in a post that ended with you writing, you know what, Mike Bloomberg, and the rest we can't say, blank you. Matt, so when will you start beating around the bush and telling us what you really think?
Yeah, no, I was surprised that he came out with that line. I mean, obviously that's been kind of a conservative talking point for a few years now, that this whole crisis was caused by Congress forcing the banks to lend to poor and unworthy home borrowers, but nobody who actually understands anything about Wall Street, and Mike Bloomberg certainly does, believes that. And so it was shocking for him to say that.
And it's amazing the strong language that that has drawn out. I mean, you know, you certainly have your opinions, but for you to actually use the F word against somebody with Mayor Bloomberg's reputation, very, very rare, or against anybody. And Paul Krugman came out and called him an ignoramus in his New York Times column. So he really drew a reaction. But the argument that the mayor would make, and Greg David from Crane's New York Business made it on our show from the Green Space the other day, is that if you look at Gretchen Morgenson's book, the New York Times business columnist, who is no slouch at dishing it to Wall Street, she says you got to look to the government and Fannie and Freddie and the whole policy of trying to get so many more economically marginal Americans into home ownership that started the whole thing. So do you want to talk back to that notion?
Look, obviously, government policies that encouraged home ownership had an effect. Obviously, Fannie and Freddie lowering their standards had an impact in the sense that it created a huge amount of liquidity that was buying up mortgages. But the notion that the government was forcing these banks to lend to unworthy borrowers is completely insane. These banks not only wanted to lend to these borrowers, they were in a kind of frenzy to lend to these borrowers. They went out and they gave mortgages to everybody with a pulse. And then when they ran out of those people, they created synthetic copies of those same borrowers through derivative instruments like credit default swaps. Because for the very simple reason that they had a market for this stuff. They were securitizing these mortgages, chopping up these subprime loans, turning them into AAA-rated securities and selling them for huge profits all over the world to unions and retirement funds and to sovereign wealth funds. Nobody had to push them to do this.
Right.
They were making huge money.
And it wound up with the banks selling the mortgages in those bundles and therefore not caring what the risks that they took were in the actual mortgages that they let out, to be sure. Listeners in Zuccotti Park or anywhere else, what do you think about the relationship between the occupiers and the mayor? And it can be on this issue. I'm sure many of you who are sympathetic to the Occupy Wall Street bottom line disagree with the mayor on the issue. But also, what about the mayor's management of the encampment? 212-433-WNYC on the specific issue of the mayor and the occupiers. 212-433-9692. Joyce, what did you hear in that clip, and did it surprise you?
No, look, it was overstatement by the mayor. I don't think he's an ignoramus. I think he knows exactly what happened. There's enough blame to go around. There's no question that Congress and the former president, George Bush, and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac played a role, but nothing like the role that the banks played. And Bloomberg knows that. The banks were shoving those mortgages out the door as fast as they could. I think what this is all about is that Bloomberg is a Wall Street guy. He was reflecting the Republican line, but he was also reflecting the line of the mayor of New York, which is that Wall Street is the city's economic engine. Don't touch Wall Street. Don't criticize Wall Street. That is in his blood, and I think that's what he was doing. He was playing to his his base. He was playing to the city's base as he sees it.
Here is more of the mayor talking about the Occupy Wall Street protesters themselves from that same breakfast panel. And we know the audio on this isn't great, but this is what was available, and it's worth listening to. 23 seconds of the mayor on the encampment at Zuccotti Park.
It's fun and it's cathartic. It's entertaining to go and to blame people and look to the past, but it doesn't do anything for the future. And most of the protesters down there are complaining. I think they should be out there trying to change the world and make it better. And that's what we're trying to do in the city, and that's what people in this room are fundamentally trying to do.
And obviously the protesters think they're out there trying to change the world and make it better in their way. Why, Joyce, to what you just said a minute ago, does he think that the occupiers threaten the profitability of Wall Street and the tax revenue that they therefore generate for New York City? Wouldn't the occupiers say, We just want things to be fairer, including more taxation of the Wall Street 1% and better risk rules of the road. They're going to keep them safer from the kind of collapse that we've seen in the last 3 years.
I think what it comes down to, Brian, is this kind of a protest is not his thing. This is a man who believes in getting things done, right? That's his mantra. Do things, make the world better. That's what he said his whole life. He does not believe that protesting and marching makes things better. He is a firm supporter of the First Amendment. He is not a firm supporter of what we would call civil liberties, right? He approves of the stop and frisk, not tactics of the police, not strictly because he's pragmatic and he says they work. That tactic works. He never apologized, in fact, defends the city police's treatment of protesters during, remember, a long time ago, the Republican convention. Why? Because we had to keep the city safe. It was too close to 9/11. We couldn't fool around with this stuff. So he is supportive of the First Amendment, but at the same time, this kind of protest, in his view, doesn't get anything accomplished. He doesn't understand the mentality of the 60s/70s with Vietnam. It's not his thing. I think that's what it all boils down to.
Joyce Pernick, It's a Free Country analyst, WNYC political analyst, and author of Mike Bloomberg, Money, Power, Politics. Matt Taibbi from Rolling Stone, and author of Griftopia, a story of bankers, politicians, and the most audacious power grab in American history, as we talk about the mayor and the occupiers. And Michael in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Michael. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. How are you?
Okay.
I think there's a difference between Bloomberg currently wanting to be perceived as supporting the Occupy Wall Street's free speech rights and is actually doing so. Three things to note. He's already shifted once to saying that he doesn't think the protesters are what they're doing does constitute free speech. There's been the coordination with Brookfield Properties in their attempted eviction of the protesters. That was abandoned, but Diana Taylor's on the Brookfield board. And then there's also been the interaction with Redney to retroactively change the law so that
the real estate board. So again, a tension between the occupiers being there and some other interest that the mayor may have. Well, to that point, Matt Taibbi, both you and Paul Krugman in his column expressed dismay that Bloomberg is somehow considered a centrist hero. Why do you think he's been able to cultivate the role as moderate and centrist, and why don't you buy it?
Well, I think Mike Bloomberg's political model is kind of similar to the model of the modern Democratic Party in general, which in the last 15, 20 years or so has followed a pretty simple formula, which is stick to socially liberal policies on you know, the social issues. But when it comes to economic issues, you can go in the other direction. He's a deregulator. He's you know, basically a pro-business guy from Wall Street's point of view. But on the social issues, you know, he's pro choice. He's for gay rights. He's for all these for the environment. He's against global warming, against smoking, all these things that are near and dear to sort of upper class white liberals. But on the hardcore economic issues that people don't pay as much attention to, he's in the other direction entirely, and that's a very successful political formula.
You know who kind of took that position this weekend? Saturday Night Live. Here is Fred Armisen as the mayor. Actually from 2 weeks ago,
yeah.
But check this out.
Occupy Wall Street, I'm on your side. Come to New York and let your voice be heard. You'll be treated with dignity and respect by the city and the police. With one caveat. The second, and I mean the second I see a demonstrator lighting up a cigarette, we're moving in. The batons will come out and the badge numbers will come off. And if you think I'm joking, go ahead. Make my day.
So that's satire, Joyce, but does it capture some kind of essential truth?
Oh, there's no question about it. It was actually quite well done. I actually think that in the world we are living in, and you've got to think about the political realities of today, Bloomberg is a centrist. There's no question about it. I mean, certainly on the social issues and even on some of the economic issues, he is not far off the charts at all, as I see it. But he is a Wall Street guy. I mean, that's where his gut is. That's where he made his money. That's where he grew up, and that's what is in his heart. I mean, I also think that when it comes to the protest itself, Brian, he really is between a rock and a hard place. He doesn't want to have a riot on the streets of the city of New York on his watch. And I think underlying all of that is this great concern about what would happen. I think in his heart he wants to move in and he wants the police to break it up, but he doesn't want what has happened elsewhere to happen here.
Like in Oakland.
Yes, Oakland.
Mike in Mahwah, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, hi. You have Mike Davey, my favorite, in the audience.
Good. Not in the audience. You're in the audience. He's a guest, but now you're both on the air, so go ahead.
My point is this. I was there at Bank of America, and I tore up my car, like $1 million in accounts. Used to work for Wall Street. And, you know, what Wall Street did, actually, they were having champagne when they were, playing around with these toxic mortgage. And they knew exactly what they were doing. And at that time, when you had your guest previously, what's his name, Elias Spitzer, I sent him faxes upon faxes that, you know, this is happening right under your nose. Why are you not doing anything? So Mayor Bloomberg is just like that. He speaks from both sides of his mouth. The guy knows he's giving directions to his, Kelly, the police chief, to intimidate us and to bully us. And at the same time, he's saying you have your First Amendment rights.
Mike, thank you very much. And Matt Taibbi, to his point, and he's obviously a fan of yours, you wrote that Bloomberg's approach to governing New York is this, quote, bang heavily on black crime, embrace social issues dear to white progressives, and in the remaining working hours, give your pals on Wall Street whatever they want. You think it's that much cronyism at the bottom line?
Well, you know, I don't know. One thing I will say, though, is that, with regard to Bloomberg's attitude toward the police, I think the big police presence that is surrounding the Zuccotti Park protests is kind of a symbol for a lot of people. I mean, there's really already been deployed more law enforcement resources against these protests than there ever were against the massive crime wave that went that was undertaken in the middle part of the last decade by Wall Street. So you have all these cops who are surrounding a bunch of peaceful protesters, but there wasn't a single cop anywhere in the country who took even one person to jail for committing fraud in the amount in billions of dollars. And I think that's one of the reasons that people are upset with politicians like Bloomberg. They see them deploying these ridiculous law enforcement resources against essentially a non-threat, whereas a huge threat to national security went completely ignored. And that's the basic dichotomy that people are upset about.
Matt, what do you think about this comment on our webpage that came in from a listener named Ken? He says, I have to grudgingly give the mayor credit for the way he has handled the protests. He clearly has no affinity or interest for them or their message, which he shouldn't, seeing as he's pretty much everything they're protesting against. Despite that, he stood up for their right to assemble and speak their mind, and he deserves credit for that. What's your reaction to that post?
Well, I mean, what's the alternative? If he was going to go in and, like Richard Daley, and crack a whole bunch of heads the first week, that I don't think that would have worked. That wouldn't have been smart. And I think if he does that now, it's not going to be smart.
It happened in Oakland under a Democratic mayor. Do you not make any distinction?
No, I think, look, he's handled it better than the people in Oakland did, that's for sure, although they had a bit of a different kind of crowd in Oakland,
right,
as well, so that you have to take that into consideration. But as long as these protesters are being peaceful and they're not threatening or being violent to anybody, he doesn't really have a choice. If he goes in there with an army of riot cops and knocks them all out of there, then he's just going to make the protests even bigger than they were before. And so I think, yes, it's great that he hasn't done anything terrible, but I think that's a pragmatic decision on his part more than anything.
So, listeners, we're going to end this in a minute, but you can keep this conversation going on the comments page, as Ken and others have started it, on the mayor and the occupiers, a good place to get a conversation going throughout the day about how you think Mayor Bloomberg has handled this whole situation at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Joyce Pernick, before we go, what do you think can happen next? This was supposed to be, I believe, a 2-month protest, September 17th to November 17th. I think the intent now is to extend beyond that and see how long they can ride this from the protesters' point of view. What do you see as the choices for them and the choices for the mayor?
Well, I really think the mayor and the city at large, or at least the law enforcement arm of the city, they're in a quandary. I mean, he's got to make some kind of a decision at some point. It is they are on private property. There are businesses around Zuccotti Park that are being affected.
And residents, some of whom don't like the sanitation and noise right. implications.
And anyone who's been down there knows that, while it's peaceful, it's also kind of marginal, shall we say. It's not a place that you would want to work near or live near. As I said, it is having a negative impact on businesses. So I think at some point, if the weather doesn't do it, I think that the city is going to have to find a peaceful way, if that's possible, to clear out the place.
And Matt, some of the real Occupy Wall Street faithful at Zuccotti Park have even been said to be complaining lately about some of the more marginal elements who are not really there for political reasons infiltrating, and infiltrating is the wrong word, but, more
taking
homeless
advantage.
People taking advantage, more people who just want a place to be rowdy coming in. What do you think the options are going forward?
Well, that's going to be a problem for them as they get bigger and as this thing gets more and more attention. And their only option is to police their own crowd somehow and make sure that they stay under control. But I think what they're going to do is I think they're going to hunker down, find some way to keep a presence through the winter, and then reassemble in the spring and try to make this thing even bigger. And I understand that it's having an effect on businesses and that nearby residents don't like the protests and they have an issue with it. But if you look at the other side of the coin and the failure to reform Wall Street and to fix all the corruption that's going on in the economy, that's having a much bigger negative impact on the entire country. So I think it's a small price to pay, these protests, for keeping these issues in the public eye. And I think that the city is just going to have to put up with it until these people are finished protesting.
Joyce, one thing unrelated before you go. You were reminding me off the air that once upon a time, before he ran for mayor, mm-hmm. Mayor Bloomberg had a Herman Cain problem. But he handled it entirely differently and put it behind him. What's that history?
The history, very briefly, is that in 2001, when the mayor the future mayor was just gearing up to run. The people who worked for him knew from him that he and his company had been sued for sexual harassment in the past, not too distant to past. They knew that the company had made an agreement, reached a deal with the woman who sued him and his company, and there was a confidentiality agreement and a payout deal. They knew that this was looming in his past and that they had to deal with it. He, of course, denied any guilt at all, but they did pay this woman off. She could not talk about it. This was going to crop up during the campaign, what to do about it. They went out and they hired a private technician who conducted lie detector tests. The mayor took the lie detector test, and 2 months before he announced for mayor, they released the results of the lie detector test. Now, this was brilliant damage control, because what did it do? It got the whole story out. It got out that, in fact, there had been 3 sexual harassment suits against him. 2 of them dropped, and his company, 2 of them dropped, one of which, I said, went to a deal, an agreement, a settlement. The whole story was cycled and recycled and chewed over.
It made the press at that time?
Oh, yeah. They had a press conference to release the results, or at least a statement, I don't remember, to release the results of the lie detector test. And so by the time the actual campaign got underway, it sort of was an old story, and it recycled briefly when some other information came out. But it was so overwhelmed by 9/11 by then, and by the fact that they had done this brilliant damage control, gotten it out fast, and as far as they were concerned, answered it, that it became a non-issue.
So
that's what pals should do.
The story of 2 corporate CEOs going into major political campaigns for the first time, but Mayor Bloomberg handled it smartly, Herman Cain not so
much. He and his advisors knew exactly what to do, and they did it and made it a non-issue. Very, very smart. And again, I just want to emphasize that he, to this day, if you ask him about it, if he would talk to you about it, would say that he never did anything wrong. But nonetheless, it was an issue. It could have hurt him, and they defused it.
WNYC political analyst Joyce Pernick, author of Mike Bloomberg, Money, Power, Politics, Matt Taibbi from Rolling Stone, author of Griftopia, a story of bankers, politicians, and the most audacious power grab in American history. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC coming up next. Did you know tomorrow is Election Day? It's Election Day somewhere, if you're in certain districts or just a few states, including New Jersey. So we will do a preview of tomorrow's Election Day in New Jersey, including what may be the most interesting thing on the ballot, a statewide referendum on legalizing sports gambling. Stay with us.